and welcome to the Off Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances, and I'll be your hostess. Hello, and welcome to episode 2003, the Happy New Year episode. I'm going to make this introduction so short because I went on for so long in the Quilt Diaries. That's too long. It's too much. Just stop listening after 20 minutes. You know, just go on with your day. Okay, I'm sorry that I just went on and on. I just recorded the second Quilt Diary, and my intention was to talk for 5 minutes, and somehow I talked for 20. So there you have it. So we got two Quilt Diaries, and they're coming up right now. Why don't we go ahead and listen? Quilt Diary, day one. It's Saturday, January 7th. It's the man's birthday. We tend to celebrate the man's birthday all week. When did we start? I'd say we started maybe Wednesday, and we'll continue on. Yeah, through midweek next week. We just do. There's something very fun about that. And mostly it's just saying happy birthday every day. It's not like we do presents and cake every day. We will do presents and cake today. It is a snowy day, January 7th, 2017. It's snowing right now. It snowed last night. It started after I went to bed at 11. And when I got up, it wasn't. And now it's back. It's quite beautiful. I haven't been outside, so I don't know how cold it is. I like taking walks in the snow, and because I lived in Massachusetts 30 years ago, I still have good snow gear, or I know how to dress in snow. I think most of my snow gear is actually from when I lived up in the mountains, up in Boone, North Carolina, in the early 90s. And I still have my very good L.L. Bean jacket, and I have newer silk long underwear and a turtleneck, not a turtleneck sweater, just the neck, and all kinds of stuff. So that it's kind of fun to get all bundled up and go out and take a walk in the snow. I wear my gardening boots. And it works. A couple pairs of socks and my rubber gardening boots with flowers all over them. It's kind of fun. And now, you know, for Christmas, I got hiking poles, which I have not used yet. So I'm assuming they are snow-worthy, snow-proof. So who knows? Maybe I'll take a walk later. Everyone is asleep. It's, I don't know, it's about 9:30, maybe. I got up at 8, so I slept in, which is nice. And it's funny because this snow, which may leave us with 6 to 8 inches of white stuff on the ground, will bring Durham, North Carolina to a standstill. I mean, it already has, but for days to come. And it's kind of cool because, you know, Christmas is busy. And of course, you know, Happy New Year, by the way. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. All the stuff. Happy Kwanzaa. We had a nice Christmas. But, you know, always leading up to it, it's busy. And I had a little bug leading up to it. And then, you know, the 26th was the good Boxing Day day. But there's still some cooking to be done, which there will be now as well. But I'm trying to think. And I didn't feel like I had that long stretch of time post-Christmas to just do nothing. And, you know, it was like the 27th. Jack had a dermatologist appointment, and before that, he wanted to go to his friend Niall's house to help Niall build a computer. So I ended up being on the road a lot because, you know, Jack has a driver's license and he could drive, but it made more sense for me to drop him off and then go pick him up in time for the appointment. So that day was kind of shot. I don't know why. And also, I'll tell you what, because I've been rehabbing quilts. You know, I have these two quilts going to QuiltCon, and they need to be better than they are. So I have been working on a revision of the Bauhaus Birds in the Air, and I'm also going to play around with the Modern Birds in the Air and see how I can make that better. I need to redo some of the quilting. I don't know if I'll make a whole nother version of the quilt. It's possible. I don't know that I have time for that. And I don't know that I absolutely have to. Now, dear Adele, I sent her the picture for the Bauhaus Birds in the Air, and she made the paper piecing pattern. has also just completed a pattern for Modern Birds in the Air for me to put up for free on the website, I guess on the Off Kilter Quilt site, and maybe on Quilt Fiction as well. So if you like that quilt, you'll be able to make it yourself. And she has finished up with that pattern, and I'm about to proof it. So I think I will, one way or another, make a copy, a second copy of Modern Birds in the Air to test out the pattern. And yes, so, but I know with the original one, I, at the very least, need to do some requilting as well as block it. Because right now it's a little off kilter. So I got to work on that right away because the quilts have to be in by January 26th, which means they really need to be mailed around the 21st, maybe even earlier. So I just don't want that hanging over my head. Now today I will quilt. There's actually a snow day quilting, sewing. I'm blithering right now, blathering. I can't remember. Pam down in Atlanta, Hip to Be a Square Pam, decided we should do that. And a lot of us here on the East Coast are getting snow. I think it's all the way down to Alabama. And I don't know about Virginia and Maryland, but I think it's going up that way. So a lot of people are just like, we're staying in. And there are a lot of jokes about Southerners and snow, that we don't do it very well. And it is funny. As I said, we're going to have a lot of days. The snow is ending today. It's supposed to end this afternoon around 2. But we will have significant accumulation, and it's going to stay cold until about midweek, which means the boys might be out of school. My guess is, just looking outside right now, that they won't have school on Monday because we don't have a way to deal with the roads. It's possible they'll have school Tuesday, but it's also possible that they'll not have it, or it will be a late start, etc. Whatever happens next week, I do feel like the next few days are like the Christmas I didn't get. And I did have a nice Christmas, by the way. It's not that. But the house is full of food. I don't have much to do, no place to go, can't go anyplace. I think that's the thing that gets to you. And that was, you know, I made the appointment for Jack, and then later I thought, why did I make an appointment for him on the 27th? It's too soon after Christmas, but I did, and there you have it. Like I said, we had a good Christmas. It's been, it was quiet. We've had Christmases that were more, you know, sometimes you have Christmases that are really joyful and wonderful. Every once in a while you have a Christmas where everyone gets sick, and it's kind of, I don't know that we've ever had a depressing Christmas, but we've had very quiet Christmases. And this one was kind of quiet and nice. Everyone, I think, got nice things and appreciated them and was thankful and Christmassy. But, you know, it's also, Jack's almost 18, Will's 14. It's just not the time of life where Christmas is magic the way it was when they were little. You know, Christmas is now fun and good food and punch and cookies and pimento cheese, but not so magic. That's okay. It's okay. It doesn't have to be magic every year. So, quilty things to talk about. I got Jackie Gehring's book, which now I'm like, is it called Walk? Is it called Line? I think it's called Walk, but it's about walking foot quilting, straight line quilting, which I'm becoming more and more of a fan of. Oh, I finished the baby quilt, finally. I still haven't given it to them, though. But I finished the baby quilt for Colin and Pamela, I don't know, like a week ago. That was one of the things that I was doing right post-Christmas, is I wanted to finish up that quilt. And I think I had gotten as far as quilting it maybe right before Christmas, and then all I needed to do after Christmas was bind it. I think that's how it worked. The quilting I did was the, someone looked at the Paperbirds, the Twilters quilt, and called it, which I did the same kind of quilting, and called it a serpentine stitch. It is on my Bernina, which is, what, a 1230? It's the number three stitch, which is a wide zigzag, and then you put the stitch length high to like 3.75, and it's makes a nice little curve. You could also call it a scallop. I think my mom called it a scallop. So it's not angular anymore. It's rounded, and it's really nice. And I did it on the diagonal, and I think I put an inch between the quilting lines, and I just love it. I think it's going to be my go-to. I learned this, by the way, from Krista Watson and Angela Walter's book. I'm pretty sure it's the one they did together and not Krista's first book. Maybe it's Krista's first book. I can't remember. You should have both of those books in your collection. And by the way, Krista now has a Craftsy class, which I just got. I haven't watched it yet. I know it will be fabulous. And I'm excited because I feel like I could use a general brush up on machine quilting as well as some help with the free motion quilting. One of the reasons why I'm really digging the straight line quilting is it's just easier. It is because you have more control because, you know, you're just doing straight lines. And the scallop straight lines, just, it looks good. So look up Krista's books, buy Krista's books, or if you have a Bernina, you know, whatever machine you have, if it has a wide zigzag, that's your stitch. Lengthen it, and you get the nice serpentine scallop thing going on. So I finished that. I bound it the way I did the binding, and actually I got this idea from Krista. As the binding is white, except there are two places. I think Krista just suggested one. I did two, which probably, I just made them weird. Sound with my lips. Sorry about that. Not trying to freak you out. Maybe 9 inches long, maybe a foot, and two spots of, you know, that color that I went searching for. Coral. There's a lot of coral in the quilt. So most of the binding is white. And here is a bit of lucky happenstance. I had no plan for attaching the binding where these two spots of coral would be. I just bound. I just said, throwing it up to the universe. Let's see how this turns out. And where those coral spots ended up corresponded with coral spots in the quilt. It was very cool. It was just absolute luck. Even if I had planned it, it wouldn't have worked out, right? Because I just can't. Yeah, that's not. I don't have that kind of luck. It has to be total hand of the universe luck. So that turned out really nicely. I'll show you a picture. So I got that finished. And then I did another version of Bauhaus Birds in the Air. And I'll tell you what, paper piecing. I'm not a natural, but here's the cool thing. If you've not done paper piecing and you're middle-aged, consider doing it. Because in the New York Times this past Sunday, there was an article about super aging. And apparently, if you want to keep your brain active and going and really top-notch into your 80s, you need to do hard things with it. And more than just Sudoku, you have to really press yourself. And for me, paper piecing is that. Paper piecing, particularly, you know, I haven't done a ton of it. I've done a few projects. One of which is very easy. I think the first two I did were fairly easy. This one is much more complicated, the Bauhaus Birds in the Air. So there's a lot of angles to figure out, particularly at the beginning. Once, it was interesting, about maybe a third of the way through it finally clicked in. And what clicked in more was intuitively understanding how I needed to angle the fabric to get it right. I cannot talk you through the paper piecing process. You know that. You know, if I tried to explain to you, well, if you've never paper pieced, what you do is you have to kind of mirror and flip, or flip and mirror. And yeah, I can't talk to you about that. You know, they're good books. They're, Carol Doak DVDs. But what it asks you to do is some flipping and some mirroring, and that my brain really doesn't work that way. I think some people's must. I think some people probably can go into paper piecing pretty quickly and get it. For me, it was a veil of tears. It really was. I mean, at some point, my brain just felt like it was scrambling. And I should say that other things were going on, and they're all good things. I got a new work computer, a new work laptop. My old one was 5 or 6 years old. It was just time. And, you know, this is the kind of thing you do at the end of the year. You go, huh, what might I possibly need that I should go ahead and get now so I can write it off on my 2016 taxes? And so we decided to get a new Mac Pro, which is what I use. And I got a beautiful one. And it's light. It's light and airy. But we finally decided that I should just go to Gmail. I've got all these different email accounts. And, you know, that can be a little unstable. Entourage has been a little unstable. That's what I've used. So the man was switching me over. So he does all this stuff. I don't know how to do it. So he's getting me all set up. I already had a Gmail account, but now it's like getting all the disparate emails onto Gmail. And just, you know, new computers, new programs, new whatever. And it's a little overwhelming. And at one point, the man thought he had lost a bunch of my emails. And that was very upsetting to me. And partly it was very upsetting because I had been paper piecing and I really could not take one more thing. And in fact, after we got the new computer, we were on our way home. And the man said, you know, I think you should start writing in Pages. And I got really mad at him. And I was just like, why are you bringing this up now, Dad? You know, because essentially I had been paper piecing. My brain was overloaded, and the idea of having to learn any new programs, particularly since I've always written in Microsoft Word, and I understand that, you know, I don't really use Microsoft Word for anything but typing, and I don't use anything else in Microsoft Office. In a way, it's ridiculous that I use Microsoft Word, but that's what I've been doing as long as I've been doing this. And the idea of, like, here, you got a new computer, new email program, new stuff going on, and you're paper piecing, and I would like you to switch to a new word processing program. And I was just like, I kind of lost it. Not really. I'm not a really lose it kind of person. But for me, I was very upset. And later I said, you know what I probably should have said is, let's discuss this in a week when I'm not paper piecing. Because that is what paper piecing will do to your brain. But now, you know, once I got to a place where I understood how to angle the fabric. And what was also helpful, you know, so you've got your paper piecing pattern and you have to figure out how to sew on your fabric onto the pattern so that when you iron out your fabric, that it covers the area you need to cover it. That's about as much as I can say about paper piecing. And it seems like it would be easy, and it turns out it's not. That if you're working with a lot of angles, which this Bauhaus Birds in the Air is nothing but weird angles, right? And what I realized is the best thing to do was just place the fabric where I thought it should be, pin a 1/4-inch seam, and then before I even sewed, flip the fabric. And I learned how to shift it around to get it right. And so, but I'd done that enough. And I did that all the way through. I did not take it for granted ever that I knew what I was doing. But more and more, I was getting it right. More, I had figured out the angles. I figured out how to play the angles. And that was fun. And I felt like I'd accomplished something. And I felt like my brain was better and stronger. So more paper piecing for me, I guess. It'd be interesting to think, quilting-wise, what else to take up that's hard. Maybe doing more curved piecing. I've done some, not a ton. Maybe just more pattern. To call myself a pattern designer is really a stretch. Adele is my pattern designer. I'll call myself a pattern maker-upper. Yeah, that's kind of what I do. And then right now I'm going to rely on Adele to then take my craziness and work it out mathematically. How nice to have Adele in my life. So, yes, paper piecing, rehabbing, binding. I like binding, and I like the sewing the binding to the back a lot. I find that just a really, I mean, hand sewing, and that makes me think that I need to really get back to also the quilting of the Civil War Birds in the Air quilt, which, you know, I'm using this pearl cotton, number 5. It's kind of thick. So it's kind of got a rustic look, this quilting I'm doing. And I like it. I like it. And, you know, if I end up hating it, it'll be easy enough to tear out. Because it's hand quilted and the thread is really thick. So, hey, no harm, no foul. Let me tell you about some things I'm reading and watching. I don't know if you have Acorn TV. It's through Amazon Prime. It's, I think, $5 a month. It's such a fun add-on because it's all British TV. And there's a show called Where the Heart Is. And it's set in some small English town, not really a village. And there's a village feel to it, but also an industrial, lightly industrial feel to it as well. And it centers around two nurses and their families, and they happen to be sisters-in-law, and one is a little bit older than the other. And it's really wonderful because while it's a little bit soap opera-ish, it's also has a feeling of real people and real problems and real world. So it's not where you're kind of going, well, this is great, but this isn't how life works. It's not how life works and that everything is resolved by the end of the storyline, but it's life works. It's how life works and that people are complicated and sometimes do things not in their best interests, and sometimes that doesn't all work out. Sometimes it does. So anyway, so I particularly right before Christmas, as I was working on quilting the baby quilt, the flying geese quilt, I watched that quite a bit and really enjoyed it. So if you like sort of that kind of saga, which is more focused on families and small towns, but not overly sentimental, but British. So, you know, you kind of got that good accent going, and they drop where, I'm not sure where they are in England, what part, but they drop the article, the. So, and that's, so the most common, or what you might be familiar with, it's like someone's not in the hospital, they're in hospital, but they drop all their articles like that in the school. It's in school. No, that doesn't make sense. That's not exotic at all. We would say in school. I don't know. You know, so instead of, I'm going down to the market, I'm going to market. No, that's, no. Well, anyway, so I'm not coming up with any examples that sound different from what we would say here in the States, but it's lovely. So I recommend that. For Christmas, I got a couple novels. I restrained myself in my requests. I got Zadie Smith's new novel, Swing Time, which I didn't love. Parts of it I did, and she's an amazing writer, but I kind of got less and less interested as I went along with it. It's a story of two young women who become friends. They grow up in a London project. They're both half black, half white. The narrator, and this is the big deal about this novel, it's the first novel that Zadie Smith has written in first person. Her mother is black and her father is white. And the girl, Tracy, who is her best friend during her childhood, has a white mother and a black father, who's not around very much. And they both love dancing, and Tracy's actually a very talented dancer. So it follows them through growing up years. And then the narrator, who's actually never named, I don't think, she ends up working, starting in her early 20s, for a performer who's based on Madonna. And she spends about 10 years in the employ of this woman, who ends up starting, and a lot of the story is about the school that this woman, that the performer, Amy, A-I-M-E-E, Amy opens, you know, once she's fabulously wealthy and world famous, and she decides she wants to open a school in Africa. And so there's a lot about that. So there's interesting things and parts that I really liked, but ultimately I didn't feel all that emotionally attached to the narrator, and that's a problem for me as a reader. I want to feel some connection to whoever is leading me through the story. I'm in the middle of reading a really wonderful book by Pauline Giles, J-I-L-E-S, I think that's right. It's called News of the World. It is set in, let's say, 1870s Texas, and you have an old former soldier who is charged with, or actually takes on for a job, returning a young captive, a young white captive, a girl who was captured, I'm going to say when she was 4 or maybe 6, by the Kiowa? I'm not sure how to say that. Kiowa? By that tribe. And in a, there's some sort of politics going on, some sort of deal-making where she is released. And the captain, as he's called, is taking her down to San Antonio. So, and it's quite a trip. It's, the writing is wonderful. This was a National Book Award finalist. And yeah, it's quite, it's just lovely, and it gets compared to True Grit, and there are definitely some, that's definitely a valid comparison. The characters are just really great, and so I'm enjoying it. It's not a very long book. I'm probably 2/3 of the way done. I am also right now reading a memoir by the English novelist Jeanette Winterson. I wanted something to read during the day. It's hard for me sometimes to read novels during the day. I tend to read them more at night when I'm not interrupted by dogs and boys and noises and chores and errands. So I wanted some nonfiction to read. So I went to the library and I was looking around in biography. And I just stumbled upon this because I was looking for a collection of letters between Eudora Welty, the great Southern writer, and Ross Macdonald, the mystery writer. And I did find that, and I realized I wasn't, I mean, I love Eudora Welty, but I like reading letters, but for some reason, I guess because I'm not really familiar with Ross Macdonald's work, I wasn't that interested. I think there's also a collection of letters between Eudora Welty and, I can't think of, it's Maxwell, William Maxwell. Maybe I'll read that instead. In any event, so I was over in the, you know, the W's, and my eyes happened upon Jeanette Winterson, Why Be Happy When You Could Be Normal, which came out in 2012. But it's one of those, I remember, you know, there was buzz around it, and it gets referenced, oh, this is similar to Jeanette, you know, Winterson's Why Be Happy When You Could Be Normal. So I thought, well, let me take a look at this. And it looked kind of interesting, so I brought it home and I started reading it, and it's wonderful. She grew up in the 60s and 70s in Manchester, that area. That was the big city near where her smaller town in England, and she was adopted, and her parents were Pentecostal evangelical, or evangelical Pentecostals. I just think of Pentecostals as being evangelical. I didn't actually know that the UK had Pentecostals, so that was interesting. And she's a wonderful writer, and she's her mother was depressed. I think it sounds like her mother was manic depressive and not a good mother, and very afraid of the body and human sexuality. And in fact, Winterson wonders whether or not her parents ever had relations, and if that's in fact why they adopted her. And her mother, she's a very difficult person, really a pretty horrible mother in a lot of ways. And she actually did not beat Winterson. She would tell Winterson's father to beat her. And her father actually comes off as, he was beaten down emotionally by his wife. And so although he did beat his child, he was told what to use and how many blows to administer, he never hit her otherwise, and is in a fairly sympathetic character. But what's funny, and why this book in some ways is so wonderful, is I wouldn't say that the mother is a sympathetic character, but you feel that Winterson, it's not a hatchet job. She really works hard to try to understand who her mother was and what her mother wanted. And so there is a kind of compassion, I guess, that I really appreciate. And, you know, it's interesting, too, she talks about growing up in this church, which, you know, I don't know how much you know about Pentecostalism. I don't know how much I know. But, you know, it was pretty literal Christianity, all right? So there wasn't a lot of nuance. But, you know, one of the things that Winterson pointed out, and I just got to this passage last night. So, you know, we're talking about working class people, people who didn't have much education, as, you know, Winterson's parents did not. But she talks about, first of all, the schooling, you know, that they had, interestingly enough, included a lot of Shakespeare and a lot of memorization of poetry and Shakespeare. And then these people in her church, they did a lot of Bible study. And the idea, you know, and Winterson is clearly not a religious person and has left the church, but she talked about how that reading and that studying, you know, it really made them work their brains. It really was this education and this dealing with ideas on a regular basis that really, you know, that gave their lives depth, a depth and a meaning that they might not have had otherwise. Again, it's, so this is what I love about the book, is that she's not, she is a compassionate witness to the lives of others. And, you know, maybe especially in this day and age, you just feel like, I'd like more of that. That was like, there was in the New York Times a nice piece about President Obama written by J.D. Vance, who wrote a really good book, which is well worth reading, called Hillbilly Nation. Vance is a, he's a money guy, right? Or so, but he's in his early 30s. He grew up in Ohio. His people were from Kentucky, from Eastern Kentucky, as some of my people are. And they, you know, there was just sort of a, you know, there was out of Appalachia, a white migration, a mountain people migration into places like Ohio, or your industrial Ohio and Chicago and what have you. And Vance grew up, you know, so his people were working class or poor. He grew up with a lot of chaos. And the book is really about trying to help everybody else understand what's going on with working class, a certain kind of working class person in this country. Not everybody, but particularly his people, who seem so foreign to a lot of other people. Like, what are they thinking about? And particularly in sometimes people who seem to, from an outsider vantage point, sort of voting and not in their best interest, not always making choices in a lot of ways that aren't in their best interest. And of course, now we have, particularly in the Midwest, but also in the mountains of North Carolina and other places, actually, you know, this methamphetamine problem, and also, and this is all over the country, you know, just an opioid addiction problem. And so that's what this book is really getting at. It's fascinating, but he's conservative. And he wrote a really wonderful piece about President Obama. And even though he's, you know, ideologically, they're very different people, have come from different, very, you know, intellectual places. And Vance, he ended up, it's interesting, he, you know, he's a smart kid. And he ended up, I think, at Yale Law School. I think he joined the Marines and then went to maybe Ohio State when he got back. And worked, and, you know, ended up at Yale, which was, and that's a really interesting part of the book to read about, to read, just that kind of culture clash, where things that other people know and assume, and their manners and customs are so different from your own. You know, and that's a position that Vance was in, just like, yeah, just being around that kind of wealth and a social status and what have you. In any event, so very, but ended up conservative, but, you know, wrote this piece about Obama and how much he admired him as a person, as this person who also came from, you know, a hard place, you know, also a smart kid whose father was absent for the most part, you know, had a good mother, but, you know, it was a difficult young life, you know, not always steady, not always stable. And I became the president of the United States and seems to have, you know, and it was 8 years without scandal, without, you know, he's got, you know, he has this lovely family. His children seem to be doing well. And, you know, and I really appreciated that because, you know, politically, Vance doesn't agree with Obama. Vance doesn't like what Obama did. But being able to say, yeah, but as a person, I admire him. I'm like, thank you. Let's have a little more of that from both sides, you know? So that was like, to me, the most hopeful thing of 2017 so far was that column. So I appreciate that in the same way that I appreciate Winterston's look at people who oftentimes we, because they aren't educated, have a religious sensibility which seems somewhat primitive. They're people we dismiss, and she does not dismiss them. So, and she's a really good writer, and it's also it's a good story because she grew up and she, you know, it was, they're fairly poor, and she ended up at Oxford, and it took a little while, but you know, books were kind of her salvation, and a lot of us know that feeling of books as being really good friends when you're growing up, and particularly for her, they were a lifeline. So it's, you know, it's that kind of story, which is a great kind of story. So I'm reading that and really enjoying it. And I'm trying to think what else. I got a subscription to Uppercase magazine, which I talked about last time for Christmas. My younger brother gave that to me, and his wife, they gave it to me, and I got my first issue. Very exciting, and it's wonderful. I'm continuing to enjoy it. Just it's, and this one, the latest issue is about textile design, and it's just wonderful to see the work that people are doing. Now, it's interesting. You know, I've been getting some back issues off of eBay or Amazon if I when I can find them cheap. And because I am cheap. And there was a fairly recent issue on illustration. And I was thinking with that. And also here, it's so interesting design, how I guess trends are interesting, how people get their ideas, how I think, you know, sometimes it's like people, maybe there are a few people doing something similar at the same time, and the more people see what these few people are doing, oh, I like that. So an illustration, for instance, there seems to be right now very widespread this influence of what I think of European folklore styles. And I could put up a picture better than I could describe it, but if you can think about, oh, if you're my age and you grew up in the 60s and 70s, and you can think about, I mean, I feel like there were books in which that was actually sort of a style then as well. And you know, it's interesting. I feel like prior to the European folklore style, what I've seen, and this is interesting because I'm seeing it in children's picture books as well. And prior to that, it was also a style or an aesthetic that seemed more mid-modern. And this feels much more 60s to me, what's going on. And the textile design, there were a lot of similarities. And I don't say this to say, well, no one's being original, although the really original work does stick out. And it's interesting to me because I'm thinking, so is this the stuff that seems really original in a sea of stuff that is really good but strikes me as similar? Is the stuff that's really original, is that actually what we're moving toward? Are these like the, is that the avant-garde? And people will start going, huh, that's actually interesting. I'm going to try that. I don't know how it all works. And I'm not being critical of it because that seems how it does work, is that there are a few people going, huh, you know, I think that this shade of green, the yellow green that and the olivey green, yellow olive greens that are starting to fade away. Although, what is the color of the year? It's another green, and it's a more yellow. I'm a blue green girl myself. You know, I don't have warm thoughts about yellow, even though it's a warm color. Huh. So yeah, but so one person goes, huh, you know, I want to do something new. I'm tired of what I've been doing for the last 5 years, 5 months, whatever. Let me play around with this color. And maybe there are five other people doing the same thing, and then they start posting their work on Instagram or their blog, and other people are going, huh, that's kind of cool. You know, and then it exponentially grows. I don't know. I'm sure someone has written about this. I'm sure there's a way to talk about trends and how they develop and grow and then fade. But so looking at uppercase and seeing, because so much work is on display, and that's what I enjoy about it. So many different artists and makers are represented. And I enjoy that because there's a sense that Janine Van Gool, right? I've been saying Vogel saying it, and it's Van Gool, that she's quite omnivorous and voracious, and she really is looking for all kinds of work, and people send in work and say, here's what I'm doing. And what I like about that, although it can seem a little overwhelming, you know, if you've got this issue that's got over work from, like, say, over 100 people, it's like, wow, that's a lot. And at the same time, it works against what you see so often, which is we get to have 3 people right now that we're going to celebrate. And that's all we have room for, right? It's the 3 people. Sorry, we wish we had room for you, number 4, but we don't. The opposite thing seems to be going on in uppercase, which is clearly there are hundreds of people whose work is interesting, thousands of people who are doing really interesting work. And we're going to try to get as much of that work in here as we can, whether it's illustration or textile design or bookmaking or woodworking, whatever it is. We want to see as much as this and present as much of this to you as we can, to say there's all kinds of creativity going on. And I think that's why I'm really enjoying this magazine. Because it's inspiring, because you see so many people are doing this work and they're doing good work, and it doesn't have to, you don't have to be number one. You can be one of thousands of people who are doing great work. And I know if you're like, well, yeah, but I'm trying to start a business. It's like, well, yeah, that's a different monkey. Ain't my monkey. And I do think probably if that is yours, and I just made that whole thing up, that ain't my monkey, but I like it. You can learn. You can go, and because everybody's website is listed or Instagram feed, and learn. But I like the idea that you can also go, yeah, I'd like to start a business and distinguish myself somehow to make, because that's partly what you have to do to make your business work. But I don't have to be the only one. We don't have to have a star system here. I like that idea a lot. All right, well, I need to get to work. Man, now the snow is really coming down. It's so pretty. It'll cause such havoc for the next few days. But, hey, I get to just chill out, and I don't have to go anywhere. And as long as the power stays on, that's all very cool. Power goes out, we build a big fire, and we're still good because we have our minds, and we have our books, and we have our flashlights. All right, I will be back here sooner rather than later. Bye. Quilt Diary Day 2. Did I mention that I had some idea that I would do another quilt diary over the weekend and get this all posted on Monday? I may have said that, may have just thought it. Didn't happen. It is Thursday, January 12th, and we've had quite a weather week here in podcast land. As you know, I don't complain about the weather, so I certainly wouldn't complain about freezing temps and ice and snow. I didn't actually really mind it. We had a storm come in late Friday night and woke up Saturday, and there was a little bit of snow on the ground, nothing too dramatic. And I thought, oh, well, you know, because I'd already had dreams of, I don't know, days of being locked inside the house, cocooned. I had done my shopping, so I was fine. And then about mid-morning on Saturday, it started to snow and do other things that involved ice and very cold precipitation. And by Saturday afternoon, the world was closed. And it didn't open again until yesterday. So here in North Carolina and other parts of the Southeast, we get shut down pretty fast by winter weather. And partly it's because we don't have the tools to deal with it. Just, you know, cities aren't going to invest in snow plows because we just don't get enough snow to justify it. They pre-salted the roads before the storm. But what happens is we get some snow, we get some sleet, and it melts, and then it freezes over, and it's worse than it was when it began. And you just don't go out. You just, you know, show-offs go out, but the rest of us just stay home and build a fire. So it was all very nice. I got a lot of quilting work done. You know, I'm rehabbing my quilts. I'm rehabbing the modern birds in there. I'm almost done with it and have accepted the fact that, you know what, not that it's not just imperfect, but as far as the quilting goes, it's not show-worthy quilting. But I have repaired all kinds of spots. I have buried threads. It looks, I think, better. I've got a couple little spots that I want to fix up quilting-wise. And then I'm going to soak it, and I'm going to block it. And it's not that off-kilter at this point. It's not an exact squared quilt. I would not call each angle... I don't think I've got 90 degree angles at work on this quilt, but it's not bad. But I think with blocking, I would like to wash it one more time because I have carried it around with me a bit. You know, I took it with me to Atlanta, to the Birds in the Air, big grand opening. And I've taken it some other places as well, and I think it could use a wash. It's been washed once. I'm going to wash it again. Hope that the quilting holds. But when I wash it, then when I take it out, instead of putting it in the dryer, I will put it on my foam board design wall on the back that doesn't actually have the flannel on it, and use T-pins that I have around for blocking knitting. In the past, when I've made sweaters, very poorly for the most part, I have these pins, and I will use those to square this quilt as much as I can and let it dry on the board. I've read about this, by the way. I'm not just making it up. People do it. And then I will rebind it. I took off the binding. And I'm trying to think if I can find the link, if I can remember. I know that I got the link to the site from A Quilter's Table, which is a newsletter that I subscribe to. And I don't know the name of the quilter, but she is a modern quilter. She is on Instagram. It's Quilter's Table. And I like the work she does. And I enjoy her newsletter. Lots of good links. Speaking of newsletters, my first newsletter went out on Monday. If you have not signed up for, it's called Quilt Stories, of course. If you have not signed up for the Quilt Stories newsletter, please do. And we will actually send you a free story. It's called Persimmon Moon. You will get a free story, a PDF, and you will also get my newsletter every other week. And it's a very linky newsletter. I played around with the format for a while, and it's just got sort of an update, kind of a Francis update, and then links to things, mostly quilty things that interest me. And then here's what I'm reading, and here's quilts I'm working on, that sort of thing. All right, I'm going to circle my way back around. Okay, so anyway, newsletter, yes. So do that, sign up. You go over to quiltfiction.com and sign up. But A Quilter's Table newsletter, I subscribe to it. I enjoy it. She posted a link to an article on blocking. And I want to say that the link was to somebody called, like, Quilt Jet Girl. She's kind of well known, but, you know, I'm 52. I can't remember anybody's name anymore. Anyway, so that this is her method, and it sounded good to me. So I'm going to give that a try. I am almost done with the quilting on the Bauhaus Birds in the Air, and we'll see if it works. I've got essentially a week to have the stuff in the mail. It's got to be in Austin. The quilts have to be in Austin by the 26th. So my thought was I would put them in the mail by the 20th and do a priority mail, and everything should get there on time. Yeah, so that's what I'm working on, and we'll see how it all goes. And I continue to ponder, is it worth it to do this? Particularly if you're me, who, you know, on the one hand, I'm really messy and You know, off kilter, and on the other hand, a bit of a perfectionist, which is a really bad combination. It is a combination that will cause you stress in your lifetime because it's like, yeah, I'm gonna make this quilt like the modern birds in the air, and I'm just gonna kind of piece it together, and then yeah, I'll go ahead and enter it, and then oh my goodness, they took it, and now I'm gonna have to make it like a real person's quilt, and then I get perfectionistic in a way that's just crazy making. So I don't know. Well, I'll continue to ponder. I'll know more, particularly after I go to QuiltCon. Already starting to be some twilters meetups planned. So if you are going to QuiltCon, get in touch and I would love to see you there. So that's what I'm doing. I still have not given Colin and Pamela the baby quilt, but partly, I thought I would see them at church on Sunday, and there wasn't church on Sunday because no one could get to church on Sunday. So it's possible I'm just going to go over to the church tomorrow and give it to the church secretary, or if Colin's there, pop it over to him. Or maybe I'll see them in church on Sunday. Who knows? Maybe this child will be two before he gets this quilt, and he will not be the first 2-year-old in the world to get a baby quilt made for him at the time of his birth, or prior to his birth, quite frankly. So what else to tell you? Actually, I'm not going to go on very long because I went on a long time in the last quilt diary. So I think, in fact, I'm just going to say thank you to everyone who commented on the last episode of the Off Kilter Quilt. And I'm actually walking through my house over to my computer where I pulled up the comments so I could say thank you to everyone who took the time. And I know many of you commented in your heads, and I certainly appreciate that as well. But I do want to say thank you to, let me get, Barbara, Denise. I want to say thanks to Susan, who says I should consider doing Birds in the Air in audiobook form. And Susan, that's something I've thought about. My only thing is that I feel like reading a book out loud is an art. It's different than talking. So I can sit here and talk to you and sound very natural and let myself and you and me, and we're having this conversation. And then you start reading a book and you trip over words. It's hard. I think it's hard. But who knows? And then O'Kelly the Fifth then replied to Susan, yes. But I know so many quilters listen to audiobooks while they quilt. So yeah, I need to get into that or figure out how to get someone else to do it. Which could be expensive. Heard from Quilt and Jenny and Very Lazy Daisy, and heard from Vicky. Oh, and Vicky, I was going to talk about your latest episode. Vicky does My Creative Corner 3, I think the newest quilting podcast that I'm aware of. And it's wonderful. I highly recommend it to you. And she talked this episode about why she gave up her individual membership to the Modern Quilt Guild. There's still a lot of talk about the Modern Quilt Guild, and is it worth it, and is it doing what it's supposed to do, and what is modern, which to me is a really interesting question. And I think, I've never thought about it until just now. I always thought, oh, Modern Quilt Guild, I like the way that sounds, and from it's evocative to me of a particular period and art, and actually more than art, a particular period and architecture. I live in a neighborhood that's got all kinds of houses, which is one of my favorite things about this neighborhood. Our house is a traditional two-story house. It's built in 1965. It's a nice enough house. I'm walking through it right now so you can hear the change. If you're thinking, why does the audio quality change? Because I'm walking from room to room, and different rooms have different, whatchamacallit, whatever that's called. Now I can't think of what it's called. You know what it's called. Quilt and Jenny, what's it called when you have there's a room has a certain sound quality, whatever that is. Anyway, now I'm in a carpeted area. It's going to sound different. I'm headed back to the man's study where Travis is curled up on the couch, and that's a nice place to be. Yes. So, but there are a number of houses in this neighborhood that are modern, kind of mid-50s type modern houses. Lots of glass, lots of windows, glass, what I would think of as negative space, right? It's very boxy and cool looking, not unlike modern, what we think of as modern quilts. So I've never had trouble with the name until now, when so many people find the name confusing in a way, because, you know, we talk about modern and we talk about contemporary. And typically when you talk about modern, like when you talk about modern literature, you're not talking about books written today. You're talking actually about books written turn of the 20th century, kind of through the 50s. That's modern. And that is roughly the modern period in art as well. The modern period in art might go a little further back into the 19th century. You know, so when you say modern quilts, there's a way in which it's, I think it's supposed to mean, well, I don't know if it's, you know, but we also talk about contemporary quilts, right? Like, so many names. And in fact, you know, I don't define myself as a modern quilter or, you know, and in fact, my guess is a lot of people are like this. It's you just make the quilts you're drawn to making without needing to say I'm a modern quilter. You know, what I've said in the past and probably holds true is that I'm a modern traditionalist, which means I just play around with a lot of different styles and whatever I feel moved to do. And I think with modern quilting, some of what is happening is there are people who came into quilting through modern quilting and feel very identified, not just with that aesthetic, which seems to me changing and evolving as it naturally would, but perhaps when it comes to the shows, the quilts that are juried in there's a more narrow definition applied, a more narrow standard of what is modern when it comes to actually defining, you know, QuiltCon, because it's like, it's QuiltCon, it's the Modern Quilt Guild conference, convention, whatever con is, who knows. but, you know, so there needs to be a somewhat narrow framework or more, you know, or at least defined framework of what these quilts are going to be like, aesthetically speaking, you know. But then there's the living thing, which is this quilt movement in which quilters are feeling freer to play, I think, and to move around in different traditions, and also to, and I do think it's a kind of play, you know. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, like, you know, there's all this talk about the quilt police, and in some ways I don't believe in the quilt police, although I always want to be careful, because if I've had a good experience, or if I've not experienced the quilt police, and I don't even think that time where my quilt got put in the corner, I don't think that was quilt police. I think it was people not knowing me, not being enough a part of that community to, you know, be given a privileged space, as we might say. So I want to be careful, because I think there are people who have felt like I'm being snubbed because my quilt, you know, or I'm feeling judged because perhaps binding not attached perfectly, or everything not being perfect, or an uneven seam, a point that's not pointy enough. So I know people have had those experiences. And because I haven't done a lot of shows and haven't been really super active in a guild, I have not, you know, my experience is with you, is with people who comment, on the podcast or on pictures of my quilts that I post. And that's been entirely positive. So, but what I'm saying is, yeah, I think that there is a sense that for a long time in quilting, particularly, let's say, show quilting, guild quilting, that there was this standard of construction that was pretty perfectionistic. And it kept some people from even attempting to quilt, because they felt like that, you know, that for some people, you know, it's like sewing a perfect seam. That's their gig, you know. And we know, and this is something I just learned, you know, I can't remember when I learned this, but it just is fascinating to me, that there are people, what they do every year is they make their show quilt, you know, with its 8,000 pieces and its humongous medallion and all that stuff. And that's their gig. And it's not mine, and it's not a lot of people's. And I think that's been the beauty of the modern quilt movement, is to say, come as you are. And modern quilts, quite frankly, it's certainly in the beginning, for the most part, were very simple quilts to make, right? If what you're doing is sewing together wonky blocks, right? Wonky log cabins or just big, huge pieces of gray and dark gray fabric with, you know, some smaller, let's see, three orange squares up on the upper right hand side. That's not a hard quilt to construct. And the beauty of it is, you know, when done well in terms of visually, in terms, you know, pattern wise, when done well, it's visually arresting. And that's the fun of it, is you can make a really cool looking quilt as a beginner, you know, and that's fun. So there is this element of play that says you can come in, you don't have to know the rules. And I feel like some of what's going on right now, some of the reaction to the Modern Quilt Guild is suddenly the Modern Quilt Guild is saying, oh, by the way, we have rules. And I think a lot of people are going, wait a minute, wasn't the idea that we don't have rules? And of course, but anytime an institution, you know, goes from being the club, the movement, right, into becoming institutionalized, you got rules. So anyway, Vicky was interesting. And I think for her, if I understood correctly, she joined the Modern Quilt Guild just to get a reduced entry fee for QuiltCon maybe a year ago. And then just hasn't gotten much out of that individual membership. Wasn't blown away by the webinars. Found some of them boring. Some of them are boring. And if you're not into the webinars and don't feel like, yeah, I just want to support this group to help it keep going, then yeah, why would you be an individual member? Right? Because there are things that we join that we don't necessarily get a ton out of personally, but you want it to exist. You know, so for me with the Quilt Alliance, I mean, I love the videos they do, the documentation, you know, that are available online, but I don't have to be a member to enjoy those videos, to enjoy the interviews that they post, that you can find on YouTube, that you can find through the Quilt Alliance site. But I think that the work they're doing is so important that I renew my membership every year. Even though personally I'm not getting much out of it. But, you know, the National Modern Quilt Guild, you might not feel like it's that important for it to exist. You know, and the question is it or not? I don't know. It's something I'll continue to ponder. It's an interesting thing, a National Quilt Guild. So, but a lot of modern quilt guilds are saying, you know what, we're not getting much out of this association either. We can change our name to Modern Quilters. And then keep meeting and use that dues money for something else. And yeah, so we'll see how the Modern Quilt Guild responds to that. Anyway, Vicky, thank you for your comment and thank you for your podcast. I'm enjoying it. I recommend it to everyone. Vicky's a good talker. She's interesting and she's always doing interesting work. So run, don't walk, to go listen to my Creative Corner 3. I realize as I've been talking, I've been smacking this pillow. So if you're hearing kind of this soft thud or weird noise, that's what that is. Okay. I have gone on longer than I wanted to. I need to get back to doing this and that. And will I get to the gym today? I wrote this morning. I worked all morning. And my thought was at some point I'm going to go to the gym and then I'm going to take a change of clothes and then I'm going to go over to Gugelhof, which is this German restaurant cafe that this time of day is a beautiful time of day to go because the lunch crowd is gone. And it has a second upstairs, and it's nice. It's all wooden floors and windows, and the view is really pretty. So I thought I might do that. I thought, you know, I need to finish up some quilting stuff and to get ready for the show so that I don't start panicking next week. I mean, the fact is I could mail the stuff out on the 24th overnight, you know? So, I mean, it's like I've got plenty of time and I'm almost done, but still. So I think what I'm going to do is do a little bit of quilting. And then before it's time to go pick up Will, go to the gym and at least lift weights. That's my plan. We'll see. You know what I might link to in the show notes? And this is, if you're not getting Abby Glassenberg's newsletter, I know I recommend this probably every time, but I enjoy it. I just enjoy the stuff that she links to. And she linked to a blog post. And the blog is something like linen and flax or flax and linen or something that just makes you feel sort of light and springy and textile-y. Anyway, but the it's a really nice blog. And the post was 30-day resolutions, which is instead of saying this year I resolve to do so-and-so and then you stop doing so-and-so after 2 weeks. She came up with a list for every month of one thing a month to resolve to try, because, you know, it can take 30, if you try something for 30 days, at the end of the 30 days, you go, this is working for me, or this is not working for me. And one of the months, and I think it might have even been this month, that she resolved to go to the gym 5 days a week. And I thought, you know, that's what I need to do. And I just need the time to figure out the right time of day to do that. Say maybe right after lunch, I don't eat a heavy lunch, or at 2:30 before I go pick up Will from school or something. But that is something that I need to do. And yet I keep talking myself out of doing it. I do exercise every day, but I need to go lift weights and do other things. All right, I'm going to let you go, as we say here in North Carolina, which is my way, our way of saying, I'm done talking now. But I hope you are having a good 2017 so far. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate your comments, even those ones you make in your head. Keep in touch. Sign up for the newsletter, and I'll see you soon. Bye. Thanks for listening to the Off Kilter Quilt. Come visit me online at offkilterquilt.com. Until next time, this is Frances. Remember, life is short. Quilt first.